At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Fantasy Sports Today on the Air here on Sports Grid's Thursday edition of the show. It is great to be out there seeing all of you watching us on television today, of course on radio as well. Craig Mish, Davis Maddock, 2 hours fantasy sports talk, wagering sports talk as well. Of course, preview of the big games in the NBA, the NHL, best ball fantasy football previews. I feel like we cover it all here on the show. And Davis, of course, with me for 2 hours every day for the ride. Davis, it is great to see you here. And broadcast land, as we're going to get into a lot of the things that happened in the NBA last night. And as a matter of fact, we're going to hear from a coach in the NBA who said his team flat out quit. You don't hear that often in sports, but that's the way it went for the Nuggets last night.
Yeah, and I think that he's probably right. You know, I think that these guys are probably exhausted. Jokic and Michael Porter Jr. and Facundo Campazzo and Rivers, I mean, these guys have been playing 40 minutes a night for basically the last 4 weeks of the season. Because remember, they were in a battle up until the very end to secure their seeding spot. And I think these guys are just exhausted. I think the Nuggets are exhausted. I think they are definitely outgunned by the Phoenix Suns at this point. You know, I think after two games, I am comfortable saying, you know, the Suns are just the better team. But Malone is right. I do think his guys did kind of quit on him last night, which you never love to see.
I can't wait to talk about this game tomorrow. I think I'm going to be on Denver pretty hard tomorrow. I think this is a pretty big overreaction, but we'll see. Let's get to our headlines here on the show on this Thursday. As Davis mentioned, it was pretty clear cut. Phoenix won that game yesterday. Thank goodness we both liked that one. So we were in unison. Hopefully you took the advice there. The Islanders pretty much rolled through their series with Boston. And, man, Nassau Coliseum, another Eastern Conference Finals for them. So really good job. Their new arena is going to open up next year. But great atmosphere last night, great crowd, and all the folks out in Long Island have got to see a winner now 2 years in a row. So good job there. Gerrit Cole strikes out Josh Donaldson yesterday a couple of different times after Donaldson basically starts calling out guys for spin rate. Not a great look for Donaldson, for sure. And the Mets hit 6 home runs yesterday in their win over the Orioles. The Orioles have given up, yes, again, the most home runs in Major League Baseball. And that is going to continue until their turnaround is complete, probably a couple of years from now. But speaking of turnarounds, can the Denver Nuggets turn anything around in this series? You don't hear coaches that often get this upset with their players after a game, but Michael Malone certainly had enough when he talked to the media after the loss.
I don't know. Okay, I'll have to watch the film. We had a lot of guys play really bad tonight, and then we allowed the impact of not making a shot to affect the other end. And it was really, I mean, playoff basketball. Can you sit down and guard one-on-one? It was this was just an embarrassing performance all the way around from top to bottom.
Wow. So, you know, Davis, look, sometimes coaches are very good about firing up their team and using the media. We're not going to know until we see the next game if that was the intention here. I don't know what the line is yet. Maybe we'll figure that out before the end of the show. But Phoenix probably is going to be either a pick 'em or maybe even a favorite going into the next game. Do you think that that is correct? They have to make the line that on FanDuel. Like everyone would roll if you gave Phoenix like 4 points. Everyone's going to take them. But do you think that that's where the line should be?
Well, FanDuel just posted it, and the Denver Nuggets are 1.5-point favorites at home. So this is kind of the that's the FanDuel Sportsbook telling us it's not going to be a sweep. They're obviously, you know, the Suns are going to go play at altitude in Denver. It is a little bit different playing there. Denver and Utah have two of the biggest home court advantages in the NBA because of the altitude. And the Nuggets are a talented and good enough team to get one here. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the Nuggets are going to do some soul searching and some adjusting. They'll figure things out and they'll win these two games at home. You know, they do say that an NBA series doesn't really begin until the home team loses a game. So if you use that logic, you know, there's still plenty of time for the Nuggets to get it done here. I don't know. I feel so discouraged by how non-competitive these first two games in the series was. I had such high expectations for the Nuggets in the postseason.
Yeah, and I think, look, I mean, you're much sharper than me at this, but I think that in this particular situation, and again, I was at the baseball game last night, so when I wake up, I watch the YouTube highlights. It's like 15 minutes. I get to see every play. And I didn't have to watch the whole thing. You're absolutely right. It didn't look like it was even competitive. But in sports and in betting, I'm always super careful of situations like this, of not becoming what I like to say is a prisoner of the moment. And I think there may be a chance to really take a shot here on Denver in game three. Now, look, clearly, if they lose game three, it's a wrap. You know, at that point, there's nothing. But teams do tend to go back home when their backs are against the wall and the coaches are saying things about them and they're getting fired up, that they usually respond. It doesn't mean they necessarily win, but they usually respond. And if this line, for whatever reason, and I don't think it probably will on FanDuel, but if somehow you can get plus money on Denver at home on Thursday night or on Friday night, excuse me, I don't know that how you can ignore that. So we'll talk about that tomorrow, of course, on the show. Coming up next, as Chris mentioned in the update at the top of the hour, no James Harden.
When you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat. And boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off-duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Skyline's new chicken chili is here. Now you can enjoy that legendary Skyline taste with a new protein option. Try Skyline's chicken chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. Feeling good. It's Skyline time.
Again, will it matter tonight? FanDuel is telling you, yes, it does. Milwaukee should win this game tonight in a close one. What is the right side based on the line? We'll talk about it next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back. A little preview of the Super Bowl in the NBA coming up tonight. Before we do that, NFL just announced the preseason schedule. For me, not interesting at all, but I know there's a lot of people who love that stuff. August the 5th is the first NFL preseason game. It is the Hall of Fame game between the Cowboys and Steelers. Why is it significant? It is not, but the date is significant. That means we are less than 2 months away from the NFL preseason. We're getting close, folks. Okay, NBA tonight. Let's talk, Davis, about Brooklyn Nets and Milwaukee Bucks. It is game three. There has been no reason to believe that the Bucks have a shot in this series, except for the line tonight. And wouldn't you look here? Milwaukee is minus 3.5. Total is 234. And, of course, the Nets lead the series 2-1 as they go back to Wisconsin. And as Davis has talked about many times, one of the key players in the series and in the game has been Kevin Durant. Essentially, he has been unstoppable, and unfortunately, that's the task at hand for P.J. Tucker to try and slow him down, who said that basically there's only so much you can do against one of the game's greats.
He's going to score. I mean, maybe the greatest scorer ever, you know, one of the best. He's going to score the ball. Nobody's going to stop that. We just got to keep fighting, keep trying to get through screens, keep trying to get into them, make them take tough twos, keep them off the three-point line, stick to our principles, keep doing the things we're doing, but better. We got to be better.
That'll be important again tonight, Davis, because if KD goes off for 40, Bucks are going to lose. FanDuel line is telling me Bucks are going to win. I mean, that's the line I see tonight, minus 3.5. The world is going to be backing Brooklyn tonight. I mean, my guess is on FanDuel and, again, bad job by me not having it up. I'm going to guess 3/4 of the bets tonight are going to come in on the Nets. Is that the right side?
Yeah, as you and I are sitting here right now, I am going to go bet the Brooklyn Nets plus 3.5 points right now, because what is this line? What? I don't understand. I just do not get how you can watch those first two games and say, oh yeah, you know, I think the Bucks are going to give them a good run here. I mean, I think that if I was, working for our friends over at FanDuel, I would probably make this line Nets by one or Bucks by one. I 3.5 points feels like a lot, especially because, you know, on the money line, you can get the Nets at plus 138. So $100, 138. So I feel like that is a ridiculous line. I mean, Kevin Durant has been so good in these games, and Giannis is having the problem that he's always having, right? The problem for Giannis is in the playoffs is the defense ratchets up a little bit, and he is not a naturally great three-point shooter. He does okay in the regular season, you know, enough, of course. He's won an MVP award. He has been, and I am not one of these people that's like, oh, you can't win a title with Giannis as one of your best players. He's a bad shooter. He's overrated. Like, I don't think any of those things. I just think the Nets are so phenomenal. And if you think about it, Kevin Durant was really the original Giannis, like the 7-footer who you can play with the ball in his hands, you know. But Durant is an amazing shooter. Durant is probably the best scorer in the NBA right now. So I am on the Nets heavy here, and I'm placing this wager right now as I'm talking to you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to vehemently disagree. I believe the line says Milwaukee is going to win and win this game big. I don't understand it. I don't know why, but that is what I'm staring at. I am staring at a line that does not look right. I agree with you 100%. Brooklyn should win this series. They should sweep this series, but they make these lines for a reason, and I'm very scared that Milwaukee is the right side on this game tonight. So we'll see tomorrow when we come back on the show. All right, Clippers and Utah Jazz, a little bit of a different story here. I think we expect a long series for sure in this one. Utah's been arguably the best team in the NBA this season. It's hard to argue that. They're minus 3.5 tonight. The total is 222.5. It was a really close game last time out. Remember, there was some push. I think some people pushed and some people won with the Clippers based on the closing line there. And Utah leads the series 1-0. Clippers spoke yesterday about some things they do differently. Is there a chance that they kind of shift their lineup around a little bit? Ivica Zubac played a ton of minutes last time out. I think he played 20 minutes, and he was asked specifically what he needs to do when he's on the court to make sure that the offense is running well.
I mean, offensively, I feel like the most important thing is to get the guys open to set good picks. And when you go small, it's you know, the it's not as easy to set those picks. And as we said, Utah was more physical last night. They were getting through all the picks that we set. So I feel like my biggest role on offense is just to get guys open. And when I'm out there, that's when I'm on an offensive end, I'm always thinking how to get Kawhi open, how to get PG open, Reggie, or whoever got the ball. And you know, I always thinking about angle of the picks. Should I hold? Should I slip? So that's I would say is the biggest key of our you know, our position in offense.
I will say this, Davis, from watching the Clippers talk yesterday, it's the playoffs and it's only game two. I'm not saying that there's panic from the Clippers at all. I don't want to indicate that because that's not true. But there were a lot of philosophical questions about sort of how they're playing, the way they should be playing, the lineups they should be using. I don't know that I've heard that on a lot of the other interviews with the NBA teams. And again, you know a lot more than me about this. Is that a fair assessment? And is Zubats, what he's talking about, is that something that's relevant to the outcome of tonight's game?
Yeah, it's super relevant because the Clippers have not always played their optimal lineup, and the Jazz are an awkward matchup for them because the best Clippers lineup doesn't really include a center. And so, you know, against the Bucks, against the Nets, if either one of those teams were to make the finals, against the Suns, you can pretty much get away playing Marcus Morris at center. I mean, honestly, playing Kawhi Leonard at center, like, just because you just play four big guys and a point guard, right? You play Batum, Marcus Morris, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, and a point guard. That's going to be a really good defensive lineup, but it's just tough against Rudy Gobert, because you're never going to get an offensive rebound. You're just never getting an offensive rebound if you're Kawhi Leonard or Marcus Morris against Rudy Gobert. And it's very hard to win games without getting, you know, those extra possessions. And they also don't really have an answer on who's their best point guard. They have Rajon Rondo, they have Patrick Beverley, and they have Reggie Jackson. None of those guys have been good. Like, just to put it bluntly, none of them have played well. Reggie Jackson has had some stretches, but he's not a good shooter. So it's hard to play him with Kawhi and Paul George because he needs the ball. And then you're going, oh, well, that means, you know, Kawhi Leonard doesn't have the ball. So it's you are 100% correct. They don't really know what their best lineup is. They're probably going to tinker with it a ton over the course of the series. But I agree with your initial assessment of the series. I think we're in for a dogfight. I think this is six or seven games, and I think it's going to kind of come down to who is more jaw-dropping amazing, Kawhi Leonard or Donovan Mitchell.
And any lean here? I don't feel like I have a good pick in this series at all. I'm just going to pass.
No, I'm gonna take the Clippers tonight because I think that just makes the most sense to have it end up being, you know, it's just that is going to even it up and sets us up best for a seven-game series.
Okay, maybe money line there then too, because, you know, Clippers kind of covered, I guess, the first game again, depending on when you bet it. If you bet that game while we were doing this show, by the way, a couple of days ago, you would have ended up winning taking the Clippers, but I think the closing line gave you a push over on FanDuel. But regardless of that, two good games tonight, of course, in the NBA. We'll talk about them on Friday. Coming up next, a really intriguing conversation with Davis and Pat Corain as they talk about tight ends in fantasy football, because tight end value has never been higher, and there is a massive debate going on as to the top tight end in fantasy football this season that is not named Travis Kelce. Who is it? I'll tell you when we come back next year on Fantasy Sports Today.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Sports Today here on Sports Grid. I'm Davis Maddock, giving Craig Mish a little break, joined by my buddy Pat Crane from NBC Sports Edge. We're going to be talking about tight ends in fantasy football this year. The same as it ever was at the top. There's three tight ends to draft, though Zach Ertz has now been replaced. You know, the last 5 years, Ertz has been replaced by Darren Waller. So it's Travis Kelce in the first round, Darren Waller at the tail end of the second round. And surprisingly, George Kittle, you can draft him in the third round now, Pat. And I have to say, I'm not on board with the market on this one. I have Kittle ahead of Waller in my rankings. I prefer to take Kittle where he goes than Waller where he goes. Where are you at on Kittle versus Waller?
I'm still team Kittle. I've been a little bit swayed by the argument for tight end premium, where you can definitely project more reception volume for Waller than for Kittle. If you're making the assumption that, you know, the team's going to be, the 49ers are going to be a little less high volume when Lance eventually starts getting starts. But with George Kittle, I feel pretty confident that he's the most talented tight end in the league right now. And he's now in a position where he's either going to get a healthy Jimmy Garoppolo for, you know, a fair amount of the season, or he's going to get Trey Lance playing at a level to beat out Jimmy Garoppolo. So I think he's going to have better quarterback play than last year, and the weapons around him are pretty good. The potential for him to play very, very efficiently, you know, given how skilled he is very high. So I don't really get the discount on him. I can understand making an argument on Waller, but what I don't get is why these guys aren't getting snapped up back to back. There's a little bit, maybe it's just that there aren't as many drafters that want a tight end in that range, but to be able to get Kittle in the third round, I think is a huge advantage. And for CMC drafters at the 101 to be able to pretty reliably get Kittle on that next turn is a huge advantage. So I'm very much into drafting Kittle this year.
How often are you going into drafts trying to get one of Kelce, Kittle, Waller, Pitts, Mark Andrews? Andrews is the one that I find myself taking most often because I'm very invested in the Ravens passing offense. I think signing Sammy Watkins, drafting Bateman, drafting Tylan Wallace, letting Willie Snead go. I think these are all very clear indicators that the team plans on passing more and understands that their predictability in the playoffs the last 2 years comes from their inability to pass the ball, you know, super effectively. Not that Lamar has not been an effective passer, but just they needed to give him, 50% of their targets were going to guys who were not NFL players. So I really like Mark Andrews, and actually Pitts. Are you drafting Pitts now with Julio Jones in Tennessee?
I haven't been drafting Pitts so much. He's so expensive that it's been hard to get exposure, but it's getting to the point where I need to just suck it up and get some of Pitts and make sure that he's a part of my portfolio in a more major way. Because there's upside here of him essentially being the wide receiver too. I don't think Russell Gage is really cut out to be a true wide receiver too. They're probably going to be, you know, using Blake and Olamide Zaccheaus. Like, it's not a ton of competition for Pitts to really almost be playing wide receiver. So I definitely like him, but the market is very much on him. Andrews is a guy that I'm almost trying to manage my exposures on because I keep drafting him. He's tough because where you're getting him, it's usually, you know, in the back end of like the fifth or the early sixth. It's in tandem with some of these, you know, starts where you have a late first round pick. So I'm trying to avoid making all of those teams look pretty similar where they have Andrews, but it's tempting every time to take him there because, you know, this is a guy that we were excited about in tight end premium on kind of the 2-3 turn last year. He's a young player. He's played very efficiently. He was even pretty efficient last year. He dropped some touchdowns, but in terms of yards per route run, still pretty good. He's, I think, one of these guys that does have a legitimate upside to jump up into that, you know, Kittle Waller tier and have us view him like that heading into next year. So I like him. Like I said, I don't want to be super exposed to Andrews. It's always tempting to draft him.
Well, I mean, he's already done it, right? The thing with Andrews is that he's already done it, and then he kind of regressed as the Ravens' passing offense regressed. Like, that was definitely part of it. Now, in these best ball drafts, I'm almost making sure to get one of these guys, you know, one of these six guys that we've mentioned, because you'd like for your second tight end to be productive, but, you know, just the way tight end scoring has functioned is no tight end score fantasy points, like five guys every year. I mean, TJ Hawkinson, what, he scored like 60 or 70 less fantasy points than the third highest scoring tight end last season. Like, it was not even close how much of a tier break there was. So I'm not really taking Hawkinson because I would rather take Andrews, and they go very close to each other in that range. But I know that you and I are both excited about Tyler Higbee.
Yes, I am excited about Tyler Higbee. He had a ton of opportunity open up, and he's played efficiently, you know, targets per route run, yards per route run. He's been really good over the last few years, not just in that one stretch where he blew up at the end of 2019, but prior to that, in 2019, he had an incredible targets per route run. Basically, when he was out there running a route, Goff was really, really looking for him. And then last year, he also had pretty good yards per route run, pretty good target per route run. It's just that Gerald Everett was getting a fair amount of playing time. You're now in a situation where they will have probably another tight end out there at times, and we're getting some hype about, you know, Jacob Harris. And there's, you know, it's not like there will only be one tight end running routes in this offense, but he's going to be out there, I think, a lot more than he was last year. And we're excited about the Rams offense. With Matthew Stafford, they could take a big step forward. They could be scoring more points. So Higbee definitely feels like someone who could be outscoring a guy like TJ Hawkinson, or even a guy like Mark Andrews, and you're able to get him much later. He's someone that I'm going to have a lot of exposure to this year.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Higbee is he was always having to compete with Gerald Everett for snaps. We saw that crazy run at the end of 2019 when Everett was banged up. Everett is now in Seattle, and, you know, coincidentally, I really like that move for Seattle. I mean, Seattle has tried so many different guys at tight end. You know, your Nick Bonnets and your Colby Parkinsons and your Will something, the name
Jacob
of the guy.
Jacob Hollister.
Jacob Hollister. I mean, just so many guys they've tried. They signed Greg Olsen, like, and they do need a third outlet in the passing game. And, you know, maybe it'll be Dwayne Eskridge. I don't think it will be immediately. So Everett is another interesting name there. But the late round tight end gambit, I mean, everyone every year in fantasy football is like, oh yeah, this guy's going to break out. You know, this guy's going to be awesome. And then they post, you know, 400 yards and four touchdowns, which is why there is so much value in getting Kelce, in getting Darren Waller, in getting George Kittle. But, you know, we still need to cover some of these names, because a lot of times what I'll do is if I miss out on one of those premium guys, even in the underdog 18 round ones, I don't mind taking three tight ends. You know, I prefer to do it in the best ball formats where you can take 20 guys on your roster. You know, the underdog format is 18. I like taking the three tight ends a lot in the 20 man rosters. Are you ever taking three tight ends in these best ball drafts?
Yeah, I think you have to if you don't get one of those top guys, because they just, that's so low hit rates on these later tight ends that you do want to, I think, go with three tight ends in those types of constructions. And there are guys. I mean, I think Anthony Firkser is interesting. Irv Smith, I think, is interesting. You know, these guys are going well outside the top 100 picks. You can get Hunter Henry, who, you know, it's not that exciting, but he should definitely have a role. Austin Hooper. Like, there are a fair amount of guys that are cheap that are definitely going to have roles. And I would rather have two of those guys paired, you know, with someone like even a Higby. Like, Higby's not a slam dunk. So right. If I'm taking Higby as my first guy, I think you're better off than grabbing like a Firkser and a Hooper.
Where are you at on Adam Trautman? So Jared Cook left. He now plays for the Los Angeles Chargers. And if you look at the Saints roster, they don't even really have a third wide receiver. It's like maybe Marquez Callaway, maybe Juwan Johnson. Maybe they just play Mike. Maybe they make Michael Thomas play on the outside. I don't think that would be a great use of their resources to make Michael Thomas play outside. But then they could play Deontay Harris in the slot. And what they I think they spent a fourth round pick on Trautman last year. You know, a decently athletic guy. He played. I mean, he got on the field as a rookie, which for tight ends tends to be pretty big. Like if you're able to even get on the field at all, that's a positive signal. I found myself taking him in drafts where I want to take a third quarterback, because then with your last pick, you can take Jameis or Taysom. You know, it doesn't really matter which one. I'd like to have a little bit of exposure to both of those guys. And I do kind of like that sneaky stack.
Yeah, I haven't been taking him that much just because it feels like with these tight ends, I would like to have an indication that they can actually play as a receiver right. at the NFL level. And maybe I'm scarred from, you know, Adam Trautman week in DFS where he got out in there and literally put up a zero. So I think Cole Kmet is a little more interesting to me if you're getting that deep. Gerald Everett's right there too. I like that call. Gerald Everett can play. So both those guys going slightly behind Trautman, I prefer.
Yeah, Cole Kmet. I was pretty bullish on him when I was operating under the assumption that Jimmy Graham was going to retire. I think everyone was kind of operating under the assumption that Jimmy Graham was going to retire, but you know, right now he's with the team, he's on the roster. Now I don't think if Cole Kmet is good, right? I don't think that Jimmy Graham is going to be a huge impediment to his progress, but it, you know, at least to start the season, you know, Jimmy Graham is going to be eating up like a couple end zone targets, and it's just going to be obnoxious if you are.
That's true.
Yeah, Cole Kmet bag holder. But we are going to run into break here real quick on Fantasy Sports Today here on Sports Grid. Stay tuned as we continue discussing everything going on with Major League Baseball. We will, of course, have another best ball preview in the second half of the show. See you guys on the other side of break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Here on Sports Grid, it's time for us to take a look at our DFS slate over on FanDuel. We'll take a look at the pricing, get Davis's opinion on some of the top options tonight, and let's get started with starting pitchers and this interesting pitching slate. We have Max Scherzer of the Washington Nationals tonight, Davis at 11,000. Trevor Rogers, 10,100 tonight, Miami against the Rockies, but Davis, you pitted that one last night. You took Gomber there, and he was really good, so maybe you got something there going. Mike Minor, 8,200. But Give me Frankie Montas at 7,400. Are you kidding me? Oakland shuts out Arizona yesterday. The Diamondbacks have the worst record on the road in the history of baseball for 2 months. They didn't score at all. This is just so embarrassing. I don't know what happened to them. Like, even the Rockies, Davis, are putting up a little bit of a road fight. Like, they're last in OPS, they're last in hitting, they're last in batting. I get that. But they somehow scratch out some wins here and there. Oh my gosh, the Diamondbacks, this is the worst road team I've ever seen.
Yeah, they're terrible. And the Kansas City Royals are bad. Let's be clear. They're not very good, but they are better than the Diamondbacks. But Montas at 7,400. I mean, I just don't really know what's going on with that price tag. We have Montas striking out 23% of opposing batters. He doesn't really walk anyone, which is massive for fantasy baseball, because if you don't walk anyone, that gives you a greater chance of getting deeper into the games. Obviously, you know, you get points for more innings pitched. And on a slate like this, you know, we only have six games. If Frankie right. Montas is the third highest scoring pitcher, but one of the really expensive stacks does well. So, you know, if the Toronto Blue Jays do very well, or if the Boston Red Sox tee off on Zach Greinke, you're probably not going to be able to fit Scherzer with the four most expensive Red Sox, Scherzer with the four most expensive Blue Jays. So Montas's price tag, I expect him to be super popular. And that's why I think that you can pivot a little bit with Mike Minor, who is not as good as Montas, obviously, but he goes deep into games, and he's had like two or three like 40-point FanDuel games this year. So I like him as a low owned stab.
Yep, very good point there on that. Okay, let's move over and do first base and catcher on this slate. We've got Vlad Jr., as you mentioned, at 4,400. Jesus Aguilar of the Marlins, 3,600. Jose Abreu of the White Sox, 3,300. And then Josh Bell, who's been tough to kind of pin down on production this year, is 2,900 for the Washington Nationals. So, I mean, first base, normally we have like a lot of great options. And I'm looking at this tonight going, ugh, like, I'm not sure. Like, I think that there's just the slate is kind of telling the story here.
Yeah, I mean, we have Abreu with the platoon advantage in a good hitter's park. We have Vlad with the platoon advantage in that same hitter's park. Not as good of a hitter's park there in Washington for Josh Bell, but Anthony Descalfani, his MLB career is very fascinating. You know, he is death to right-handed batters. Right-handed batters just cannot get hits off of him. But left-handed bats, I mean, he for his career, Descalfani has given up like a 380 weighted on base average to left-handed bats. So I think a strategy you could use tonight is left-handed Nationals one-offs in your stacks with, you know, your Blue Jays, your Yankees, your White Sox. And then another guy I wanted to mention real quick is Miguel Sano, who his batted ball profiles are just unbelievable. Now, I don't know anything about this King fella pitching for the Yankees tonight. My guess is probably that he doesn't have a super long leash. But yeah, I mean, just Sano is a very underrated story in baseball right now. He's having his batted ball profile is the best it's ever been.
Yeah, I think King, if I'm not mistaken, King was, it's crazy. I think he was traded by the Marlins to the Yankees with Stanton. I think that was part of the trade. They actually traded him over there, too. He had Tommy John surgery, not particularly hard thrower, five and dive type guy. I don't think he's going to be anything more than that. They have some high hopes for him. He is a prospect, but yeah, I don't know. I guess I'll have to monitor that myself for tonight. All right, second base. Jose Altuve, 4,300. Marcus Semien, always a good play at 3,300. We still have not got his card yet. Got to work on that today. Jazz Chisholm Jr. of the Marlins, 3,300. He had a nice game yesterday, I thought. And Chad Pinder is nicely undervalued. And Davis, in general, Pinder, over the course of a week, is probably not going to hit a home run, right? Like, at the end of the year, he's only going to have 6 or 7 or 10 or 12. But he gets like two hits every couple days, you know? And he scores runs. And Oakland has a pretty good offense, so I'm a fan of that player.
Well, the thing that you want with Pinder is you just want to play him against left-handed pitching. He's okay against right-handed pitching, but his Statcast data against left-handed pitching, I mean, he absolutely crushes the ball. I'll give you the hint with Marcus Semien. What you got to do is you got to play against the computer. You got to put all of the monthly award cards in your lineup, and you got to play against the computer on rookie. and you can knock it out. You and your son will be able to get Marcus Semien in the show in like, you know,
wait,
an
say
hour,
what?
Probably.
Wait, what do we do? What do we do? I thought that you wait to play in the mo. Hold on a second. To get Semien, I thought what you had to do is you had to go through all of the moments that they set up there, and it's listed as some as all-star, some as veteran, some no. Am I wrong about this?
So you do have to do that, but then there's an extra step that you have to take, and there's a cool way to hack around all of the extra things that they have you do,
please,
and where you play against the computer. I'll let you know. Yeah, I'll send you an email
after
the show.
Yeah, please do that. Thank you. Yeah, no, it's just so frustrating here. And then it's like, oh my gosh, I can get it, but I could buy it, and then I'm a sucker. No more of that. Okay, where do we go here? Third base, Rafael Devers of the Red Sox, 3,700. Matt Chapman of the A's, 3,100. Yoan Moncada is now down to 2,700 for the White Sox. And Ryan McMahon of the Rockies up against Trevor Rogers today, 2,400. So let's get into this. Third base also pretty – it feels like all the positions are kind of light. Outfield seems to be the one spot where we may need to spend up a little bit.
Yeah, so we got our usual suspects here at third baseman, Devers, Chapman, Moncada, McMahon, very cheap. I know he's got this tough matchup, but just, I mean, you know, cores or no cores, McMahon is a good left-handed power bat. He can bop two home runs out, you know, home road, it doesn't matter. You'll notice, Craig, I have completely spared you of any Yankees here. No DJ LeMahieu, no Gleyber Torres. I have spared you from the against a lefty, by the way. The Yankees against a left-handed pitcher, that used to be automatic. You just chalk up, oh, they're going to score seven runs and hit four home runs against a left-handed starting pitcher like Jay Happ. But I've avoided them today. We are going in a different direction.
Yeah, and I don't blame you. The Yankees are not DFS viable at the moment. Okay, so let's take a look at shortstop. We have Trey Turner, who's been on our list for a while now, and Xander Bogaerts. Hey, Brandon Crawford has made the list. You know what's funny about him, Davis, is that he's that player this year that the San Francisco media and writers are just putting their hands up in the air. They have no idea how he's doing what he's doing this year. It's like non-explainable. And then Polanco at 2,700. But yeah, I mean, how do you figure this one, Davis? I mean, Crawford looked like his career was done and they were just going to have to pay out that contract that they paid to him. And what is he on pace for, 40 home runs? I mean, it's insane.
Yeah, I mean, he has 198 plate appearances this year with 14 home runs. He has only 14. Topped 14 home runs for an entire season once, and that was all the way back in 2015. In 561 plate appearances, he hit 21 home runs. But right now, he is on pace to have his best batting average ever, his most home runs ever, his most runs scored ever, his most RBIs ever, his most stolen bases ever. I mean, it's like, I don't have an explanation for it, but I feel like I've missed out on this because I've not been playing Brandon Crawford. Brandon Crawford hasn't been in my lineups, and best I can tell, what he is doing is he is just much more patient at the plate. His outside of the zone swing percentage is down. His total walk rate is up. His swinging strike rate is down. So, I mean, maybe he got like off-season LASIK surgery or something and we just didn't hear about it.
Yeah, that's fair too. Yeah, I mean, there's really nothing that's been reported for him and Longoria and I know Longoria is now going to be out, but him, Longoria, and Posey have all been really good. Giants have the best record in the NL West. They're in first place. The Padres and Dodgers are chasing them. Okay, now outfield, it looks like we got to spend some money unless we go with my guy Doovie here at the end. But Aaron Judge is 4,300. We have Juan Soto of the Nationals. Everyone seems to think that he is about to catch fire at 4,100. Nelson Cruz, 3,400. Yordan Alvarez of Houston, 3,300. And Davis must have saw my tweet yesterday because Adam Duvall's streak has been activated. Hard hit to end the other night, two hits yesterday, home run. And when Duvall is hot, you put him in, you give it like 3 days, and then you don't do it for like a month. I think that's where we're at with Duvall. And he always plays well against the Braves, by the way, and that's coming up this weekend as well. So I am in agreement there. Not a player I want to play every day, Davis, but when he gets hot, he's as hot as any player in baseball.
Yeah, I mean that's some good professional advice from someone who would definitely know. You play Adam Duvall when he's hot, and I mean I think that just in general, these Rockies starting pitchers, we know that they are not good, right? Like, we just know that Chichi Gonzalez is one of the worst starting pitchers in Major League Baseball. But for whatever reason, people don't stack against the Rockies starting pitchers when they're on the road the way they should. I don't know if that's a quirk in optimizing. You know, I just, there are a lot of different things. But, like, I don't think the Marlins are going to be popular at all. You know, Duvall, Marte, Jazz. Like, I think that we're going to see the Yankees be more owned. I think we'll see the Blue Jays be more owned. Probably even the White Sox be more owned. Definitely the Red Sox in their matchup against Zach Greinke. But, I mean, Gonzalez is terrible. And so getting Duvall in there, definitely a spot worth chasing. Yordan Alvarez, it is lefty on lefty against Eddie Rodriguez tonight. But, I mean, he is just having... He is so good. Yordan Alvarez, he started off the season kind of slow, striking out a bunch. He's up to a 367 weighted on base average. He's got 8 home runs in 204 plate appearances, but he is, I am big on Yordan Alvarez. I think his power tool is just incredible. Judge, you know what you're getting. You know, power bat. He's at Minnesota against a lefty who can't throw fast. Juan Soto, again, the lefty versus Descalfani thing. Just think Soto looks really good tonight. And then Nelson Cruz, just in general, if Nelson Cruz is going to be like 6% owned in a slate, I mean, how many more guys would you say you feel more confident in can hit 2 home runs in a game than Nelson Cruz? That's like what he does.
Yeah. And going back to Alvarez for a minute, it's really, to me, look, a lot of people rip the Astros, but it's sort of a testament to the Astros to just kind of, and I don't know why more teams in the American League, Davis, don't do this. Like, I don't get it. I don't understand it. Maybe National League teams, when they make the DH there too, will understand. There just are some players, even though they're young, even though it's their first year, don't mess around with the infield and the outfield. Just put Alvarez at DH and be done with it. It's the reason why Eloy Jimenez is out for the year. You don't get cute. Just put the guy at DH. We all understand that there are some athletes and there are some guys who are athletes, but they're just not as physically gifted to play the field. Astros never messed around with Alvarez. They never did that. He still got hurt even with, I had surgery last year. What, he had one at bat last year and he hit a home run, didn't play the whole year. But like, that's a perfect example of a guy that can hit 40 home runs. You don't have to worry about his defense. Don't try and get cute. Don't put him in the outfield or the infield and get him hurt. I wish more teams did this. And I know the teams don't want to because they want to have value with their players. They want to treat them as assets so they could potentially trade them. And if you can't play the field, he's not an asset. But just lock up Alvarez, keep him there for 10 years, let him play DH and hit 500 home runs. We'll talk about Todd Gurley, where he visited today, next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
And welcome back, Todd Gurley of the Atlanta Falcons and Los Angeles Rams fame, now a free agent, is visiting today with the Baltimore Ravens. And when I heard this, Davis, I thought to myself, well, this does feel right. Ravens just, you know, bringing in some running back that is not named Mark Ingram that kind of will resemble Mark Ingram to play. That was my first thought. And then my second thought was, it doesn't matter. He's not going to make the team. I don't think wherever he goes. I take it back. If he was on some dreadful team with no running backs, to be a mentor, you know, of some kind, then I think he could make it. But I mean, I don't think would he make the Ravens? Is that possible?
I mean, they did keep Mark Ingram on the roster last year. I guess it would be between him and Justice Hill as like the third running back, but Hill plays special teams and Gurley doesn't play special teams. So it's even harder. You know, if Gurley makes the roster, I would be very surprised, and it would mean that Justice Hill got cut, and I would be surprised if Justice Hill got cut. It's sad. Like, Gurley was so great with the Rams, but when your knees go as an NFL running back, you kind of need knees as an NFL running back.
For sure. Real quick, Palmetto Championship update in South Carolina, Davis. I haven't paid any attention to golf this week, so where do we stand today?
Well, it's a total joke event. We have the U.S. Open next week, so very weak field. But Dustin Johnson is playing, and he is tied for first place, 6 under par, fired a 65, tied for first with Doc Redman, who actually was listed as -8 on the PGA Tour's website. Someone input his score wrong. One of the volunteers at the PGA Tour input his score wrong, and it had to be recorrected to 6 under par. So that's what we have going on at the Palmetto Championship at Congaree.
Well, I can't wait for the U.S. Open. I've been all in on these championships. I've watched them all, watched Sunday start to finish. To me, this has been the best PGA Tour season since Tiger Woods was super relevant. I've had a ton of fun watching your previews on them and then watching these things play out. So I look forward to talking about that with you next week as well. That'll do it for the first hour of the show. Chris has the update at the top of the hour. We're right back for hour two in just 2 minutes. Stay on the grid. Don't go away.